Okay, good morning, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for joining. So the goal of this class is that it's going to be a little bit different than a lot of my other classes, in that the hope is that it will, A, be much more interactive, but also, B, much more textually based. And the truth is that I am figuring this out as I go along with you. And so if you have any suggestions or critiques, at least if they're constructive and you could be nice about it, then absolutely please do share with me. And so let's jump in. So the goal of the class, in sort of the way that I framed it for myself and that I want to convey to you, is that we're trying to understand what the goal of the Talmud, what the goal of Gemara is. And by trying to understand that, there's several introductory classes that we have to go through. And in particular, we have to understand the role of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So as a general rule, we know that although we understand that we have one Torah, it's really divided into two categories. There's the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, and the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah. Whenever we refer to Talmud or Gemara, that's the same thing, and that is the oral Torah. And Gemara or Talmud is what? Anyone want to try to answer that question?
The oral Torah.
Okay, thank you.
Commentaries, explanations, stories, and legends.
Okay, commentaries and stories and explanations on what?
On what's in the Torah and what it all means and how to deal with it.
Okay, so a little bit more than that, you're 100% correct, but a little bit more is that it's all a commentary, all an explanation, all going based off of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, which was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who we say lived right around the Second Temple period, or the destruction of the Second Temple, and so he wrote, or shortly after, so he compiled the Mishnah. The Mishnah are basically, in a nutshell, sayings from the rabbis, whether it's halachic or something in that realm, and that could be anything in the entire corpus of the Torah, and it's very terse and very basic, in that there's usually no explanation given. It's just usually this rabbi says this and that rabbi says that. When we say, and that's Torah Sheba'al Peh, that's the oral Torah. When we say Gemara, so Gemara is also Torah Sheba'al Peh, it's also the oral Torah, but it's basically an explanation of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah was written in a very terse way so that it could be remembered, and the Gemara is basically endless discussions on the Mishnah trying to understand just what the Mishnah was saying, because we understand that when the Mishnah was originally written, it probably made sense to the people who were reading it and learning it, but as time went on, it became much less clear what it meant. So the rabbis argued back and forth. Does it mean this? Does it mean that? And that's how we get the entirety of the Gemara of the Talmud. When we talk about the oral Torah, though, the greatest question that we have to ask ourselves is, what does it mean to have an oral Torah? So if I were to ask you to define the limits of where oral Torah ends and where oral Torah begins, what might you say? Maury, since you're my only live person, you're going to be called on a lot.
They're alive. You can call them.
Right. So as a general rule. Yeah, Larry?
I'm sorry. I'm going with it starts with the Torah and ends, or the Mishnah. Or starts with the Torah and ends when we've decided what it means for that generation.
So basically,
what it means in the next generation or 10 generations later might be a little different.
So basically what you're telling me is that the oral Torah doesn't really have an ending.
That's it.
Okay, that sounds good to me. So if you take a look at the first source, it's a very well-known Mishnah in Avos. And again, so part of the methodology that I'm having for this class is that I am putting everything in Hebrew, and specifically, really generally, will not have translations. We will translate it together, but if you feel strongly it should be the other way, please let me know. But this is kind of, it was intentional. So the very first opening mission of Avos, Pirkei Avos, that many of us are familiar with, Moshe kibal Torah mi Sinai, that Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, umasara li Yoshua, he gave it over to Joshua, v'Yoshua lezakenim, Joshua gave it over to the elders, Zekanim Lenevim, the elders gave it over to the prophets. Venevim Masrua Lanche Knesset Gadola, and the prophets gave it over to the men of the great assembly. That sort of marks the end of the era of prophets, and then at that point it was given over to the rabbis, etc., etc. So the first question you have to ask about this Mishnah is what? What's so confusing about the opening statement of Moshe Kibel Torah Misinei? Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. What bothers you about that statement, or what more, what deeper clarification would you like about that statement?
Which Torah did he get?
Okay, good. So which Torah exactly? We began by saying that there's the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebalpeh, the written Torah and the oral Torah, right? So which Torah did Moshe receive? Okay, so what do you think the Mishnah is referring to?
Well, it's clearly referring to the written Torah, the five books of Moses.
Why clearly?
Because it's a physical thing that, well, Moshe brought the two tablets down, but toward the end in Devarim, he writes down 12 Sfarim, for one for each tribe, and so on. And so, you know, that was provided when he was up on the mountain. And the oral part, some of it came with him, and some of it came as questions were asked, and he consulted with Hashem. For example, the daughters of Salafkar.
Okay.
He didn't have an answer to them, so he consults and gets an answer. And so that becomes added to the oral portion.
But it's not in the oral portion, it's in the written portion.
Well, that's what happens when you write it down after the fact.
Okay.
Some of it clearly had to be passed on when he wrote the Torahs down.
Okay. All right. So, but this tension and sort of the inability to fully define this is really the great question that we're going to have to wonder, and really will be the primary topic of what we're going to be talking about today. When we say that Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, so the first question you have to ask is, from Sinai, what do you mean from Sinai exactly? The only thing that the Torah records that Moshe did on Sinai was that he wrote the Ten Commandments. But we also know that it's clear that he did more than just that. Otherwise, what in the world was he doing up there for 40 days and 40 nights? Clearly, we would believe that he was learning more, was trying to get a greater knowledge of something. The question is what? That's question number one. So number one is, when we say from Sinai, what was it, only at Sinai, or does it mean from Moshe's entire life? And number two, when we say that Moshe received the Torah, so what exactly is defined as the Torah? And the truth is, if we know contextually where this Mishnah comes up, which is in the Mishnah itself, that it's written in the oral Torah, then we begin to probably form a picture of saying that this is not something that was... Zoom user. That's very, very vague. So this is not something that, again, since it was in the oral Torah that this was written, you come to believe that Moshe probably didn't just receive the written Torah at Har Sinai. He also probably received the oral Torah, or at least parts of it. And when you begin to pull that thread and everything starts to unravel, and when you go down this rabbit hole, you sort of begin to understand that probably Moshe received a great deal at Har Sinai, and you also might argue that maybe he received everything at Har Sinai. And if he received everything at Har Sinai, then why would that be problematic?
Well, then back to my example, if he had received everything at Har Sinai, he would not have had to have consulted with Hashem over the daughters of Zalafka.
Okay, good. There are several very specific examples that would sort of be counterintuitive, that it doesn't make sense. Why, if Moshe knew that he was going to have to... If he knew that he was going to receive this question, then he should have clarified it earlier, but clearly he didn't, which means that it wasn't only from Sinai. Okay, good. We also...
Well,
yeah.
They were still in the wilderness then, And so maybe we should think of Sinai as Sinai and the wilderness of Sinai.
Ah, okay, good. So Larry says very wisely, maybe we're not talking about Har Sinai, we're talking about the Sinai Desert. And the Sinai Desert is where they were the whole time. And so anything from Sinai, which is essentially the entirety of, or at least the last 40 years of the life of Moshe, so that's what it means. Okay, very good. But we then have to try and understand this question of, how much Torah could it possibly be that was passed down to Moshe at this time? Because if, again, we understand that Torah is broadly defined as the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and the oral Torah, we run into the following problem, and that is that the Torah Shebichtav is not just the five books of Moses, but it's also the Nevi'im, the prophets, and it's also the Ksuvim, the writings. And if that's the case, then wouldn't Moshe have to have basically known a great deal of human and Jewish history that would have to have been revealed to him, that he would have received all of this beforehand? That would be question number one. And question number two, we know about our oral Torah that much of the Mishnah and much of the Gemara are back and forth arguments between different rabbis. So are we to believe that Moshe received those arguments from the rabbis that didn't even exist yet, all the way when he received the Torah from God? So what do you think? Do you think Moshe received the Torah in that form? Do you think maybe there was a different form that he might have received the oral Torah in?
Well, it's since you're raising the question, I've never actually thought about it in these terms, but basically the rules and regulations, such as Shabbos and Kashrut and so on, probably came down with Moshe from Sinai or in the desert, like the daughters of Zelophehad. The other things in the Torah, like the rebellion of Korach and so on, it doesn't make sense that he knew about that when he came down the mountain. And so that's is part of the history that's added to what happened. The earlier histories, maybe the details on creation and the relationships between the patriarchs and so on, is like family history. And it's interesting to consider how much of it Moshe knew beforehand and how much of it he was told in the desert by the descendants and how much he was given by God. And so he could not have come down, I don't think, he could not have come down the mountain knowing about the future rebellions and knowing about the bad mouthing he was going to get from his brother and his sister and so on. Otherwise, he probably would have done something about it to avoid those things.
Okay, so these are all really good points. It begins to become much less clear when we start saying that it's probably unlikely that Moshe was aware of certain historical facts that were yet to come. And it also doesn't make so much sense when we try to unpack, well, maybe he wrote down some of the laws, and then maybe the stories he wrote a little bit later. There is an idea that the rabbis talk about that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote the Torah, the five books of Moses, maybe he wrote them continuously throughout his time in the desert, so that he only wrote down the story of Korach once the story of Korach occurred, and so on and so forth. But the truth is, what we're going to inevitably come to is this fact and reality that whatever it was that Moshe received at Har Sinai, even if we are to believe that he did receive the entirety of the Torah at Har Sinai, we're going to have to wonder what what it means that he received the whole Torah. Because how do you even define the whole Torah? Because again, not only does Torah, the written Torah have 24 books to it, and not only does the oral Torah have all of Mishnah and all of Gemara and several other groupings of texts, but then the Torah keeps going. There's the Rishonim, there's the Gaonim, there's the Achronim. These are all later generations of rabbis discussing the oral Torah and all at different levels and from different angles. And so it must be that when we say that Moshe received the whole Torah and he then passed over the whole Torah, instead of assuming that he passed over every specific element, which would be nearly limitless, it's more that he probably passed over certain basic principles. And when we come to understand that, it becomes a lot much, it becomes much more limited and a much smaller grouping of details that we'd have to give over. But the question is then, how do we understand exactly how everything developed since then? Right? When Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, when all of these rabbis who were, from various generations, where did they get off making their own opinion statements about various matters of halacha if it's true that Moshe received everything? And if it's not that Moshe received everything, then why do we say that Moshe received everything? So what I'd like to do now is introduce you to skip source number 2 that I have. We'll come back to it. But just to sort of build up. Do I hear myself? Okay. Just to sort of build up the questions further, I'd like to point to source number 3. So source number 3 is actually part of our daily davening. We say it right before we start Psuki de Zimra. It's the paragraph of Rabbi Yishmael Omer. And we're not going to translate it, but we'll just go through it we're not going to translate the whole thing, or we'll read the whole thing, but we'll just read through the first few lines. And it's Rabbi Yishmael Omer. Rabbi Yishmael has a really important statement. Torah in the Dreshes. There are 13 different ways that the Torah can be expounded. And and Rabbi Yishmael gives several examples. Mikav Chomer, one is through inferences. We can say that if one thing is true, then of course the other thing is true. Umigzera Shava, from textual linkages, right? So very famously, there are certain holidays and things like that that we learn from Sukkot to Pesach or the like, because they're referred to as holidays that begin on the 15th in the Torah. So we could link different words from one verse to another, and then expound something. This is talking about the formulation of different verses and being able to expound things from how one verse is formulated in one area and how it's formulated in another area. We also take generalizations in the Torah and we can expound them to more limited details and vice versa. And the list goes on. These are 13 different ways that Chazal surmised over the years that we are able to expound the Torah. And indeed, it was only Chazal who had this ability to look at the Torah and understand that it was sometimes you make a Kal V'Chomer, sometimes you make a Gzera Shava. And what we now understand through this Brisa, which again is said daily by probably many people who have no idea what it is exactly that they're reading, these are the tools that our rabbis had received to learn the Torah and expound from it. And essentially what it shows us is that the idea is that not every specific detail was given to Moshe. Certainly there were a listing of laws and principles that were given to Moshe. But beyond that, there were certain details that were either, number one, not given to him, or number two, maybe given to him, but that were not meant to be passed down, and that we had the opportunity to figure out for ourselves over the years. And so this does not mean to say that there were important details of the laws that were not necessarily given to Moshe, because we do seem to generally believe that most of those details, if not all of them, were given to him. But how we derive those details, that may not have necessarily been given to Moshe, and that might be up to us to try to understand and decide. Before we try to answer some of these questions, I want to show you 2 additional sources that will kind of extend this really confusing fact of, is the Torah all given to Moshe? Is it not all given to Moshe? What was given to Moshe? So the first is a Medrash. In source number 4, the Medrash in Vayikra Rabba says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar, Vahaleim kechol hadvarim. So there's a pasuk that says, Kol ha-mitzvah asher anochi, Kol Kichol dvarim, hadvarim mitzvah, hamitzvah, mikra, mishnah, halachos, talmud, tosefta, agados, vafilu masha talmud, vatik, atid, lomar, lefnei, rabo, kulan, ne'emru, lemoshe, b'sinai. So amazingly says the Medrash that there are so many details that we have in our Torah Shebaal Peh. We have, first of all, we of course have the written Torah, then we have the Mishnah, then we have the Talmud, then we have what's called the Tosefta and the Gados, and these are all various segments of the Oral Torah, and says the Mishnah that all of these things were given to Moshe at Har Sinai. And that's complicated. How in the world are we to believe that every specific detail was given to Moshe? And that would be the implication of this medrash. And it's quoting a verse in Kohelet, Shenemar, Yish davar sheyomar ra'ah zechadashu, chaveiru mashiv alav kvar haya l'olamim. Because there's a pasuk in Kohelet that says, there's nothing new under the sun. And therefore, it must mean that if there is truly nothing new under the sun, that it must be that Moshe learned everything from Har Sinai when he received the Torah. That's one medrash. And now let's take a look at source number 5, a very famous story in Menachos. Perhaps you've heard it before. And it goes as follows. Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, B'sha'a sha'ala Moshe l'marom, Matzu l'kadosh baruch hu, sheyoshev v'kosher kesarem l'otiyot. So when Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and he went up to the heavens. Again, whatever exactly that means is unclear, but he went up to the heavens, and he saw that Hashem was tying letters or tying crowns to the letters of the Torah. Right? If you ever look inside of an actual Torah scroll, you'll see crowns. You'll see very artistic details on top of many Torahs. So Amar Lefanav, Moshe said to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, God, mi me'akev al yadcha? Why are you spending so much time with the artwork over here? Amar Lo, he says to him, Adam echad yish atid liyos besof kamadoros. He said, there will come a man in many generations, v'Akiva ben Yosef shemo, his name is Rabbi Akiva, she'atid lidrosh al kol kutz v'kutz tilin tilin shel halachos. And so Hashem tells Moshe that there is going to come this guy, a great man, Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to expound the significance of the crowns of each letter in the Torah. And so Moshe gets very impressed by this. Amar lefanav ribono shel olam, herahu li, show me this guy, says Moshe. Amar lo, chazor lachorei, chalach v'yashav besof, shmona shiros. So Moshe goes and he sits, and Hashem sort of transports him in a time machine, and he gets to see the future. He's sitting behind, in the back of the class of Rabbi Akiva. V'lo haya yudeya mahin omrim. And Moshe Rabbeinu, who again is supposed to have received the whole Torah, he's sitting in the back of Rabbi Akiva's Torah class, and he has no idea what in the world Rabbi Akiva is talking about. So tashash kocho, so he becomes weakened by this. Depressing. Here you have Moshe receiving the Torah in the 40 days and 40 nights of the reception of the Torah, and he goes in a time machine to see a future Torah class, and he has no idea what in the world is going on. Kevan shehigia ledavar echad, amru lo talmidav, Rebbe, minayin lecha. So then, all of a sudden, Moshe Rabbeinu sees that Rabbi Akiva is asked a question by one of his students. And the question is, Rebbe, how do you know this that you're teaching me? Amar Laheni says to them, Halacha leMoshe miSinai. Says Rabbi Akiva, everything that I'm teaching you is Halacha leMoshe miSinai. It was taught and passed down from Moshe at Sinai. And when Moshe heard that, which again, Moshe had no idea what he was talking about, but when Moshe heard that, Nisyashva Daito, all of a sudden he was calmed down by this, and he was no longer bothered that he did not understand what was going on. So again, to unpack what we just saw, the Gemara tells us that Moshe was receiving the Torah. Seemingly he had received it all. And he saw God putting lots of details on the letters, and he says, why? And God says, because Rabbi Akiva is someday going to expound these extra details. Moshe says, wow, he wants to see this man. He gets to the shir, and he sees what's going on, and he is so confused, he's never heard of anything that he's talking about. But Rabbi Akiva gives as the source for his comments that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who taught all of these things. And Moshe all of a sudden feels great. You would think that Moshe would feel even more depressed, because he sees he's being quoted incorrectly, because he doesn't even know what he's saying. So how do we make sense of this statement of the Gemara? Any thoughts?
Because Moses is humble.
Okay, Elisheva, interesting. So maybe Moses is humble, but so let me understand. So maybe Moshe is so humble, so he's denying that he knew some of the Torah that he did know, perhaps. But if I could push back on that, it's hard to say that it's humility, because his response is that he becomes depressed by it. He would not be depressed by it unless indeed he actually had no idea what was being spoken about. Any other thoughts?
There's another story that says, oh, my train of thought got derailed, that says that every day on the mountain, God instructed Moshe, and every night he forgot it all and started over again. So it may be that he knew this when he was told it, and it got lost, forgotten by him, but he may have passed it on somehow, and Rabbi Akiva taught his students it. The other possibility.
Wait, one second. Larry, if I could pause you for a second. You're saying that maybe Moshe did learn this, he forgot that he learned this, and then he gave it over to someone, and then somehow Rabbi Akiva started teaching it?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, I don't know if I'm fully following, but okay.
Well, I'm not sure I'm fully explaining.
Okay, yeah, second idea?
Yeah, because some things are for those who are not transmitted in clearly or distinctly, and it's for those who have reached a certain level of understanding that they can start understanding this next step of stuff. And even if you talked about it to the lesser initiated, they wouldn't get it. You have to have a certain level of understanding and knowledge and understanding in order to understand it, and Rabbi Akiva had it.
Okay, so I'm going to say something that I think that you're saying, and tell me if this is true, that it is what you are saying. Some people might refer to someone like Isaac Newton as the father of modern physics. But if you would bring Isaac Newton into today's physics classes about modern physics, he probably would have no idea what's going on. Doesn't preclude Isaac Newton from being the father of physics. Doesn't mean that he didn't create all the foundations on which physics may stand on, or at least explain them, but it also does not mean that he knows every single detail beyond what was discovered in his own lifetime.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like your example.
Okay. So there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. Any other thoughts before we take a look at what the Rambam has to say? Okay. So let's take a look now. So the Rambam was very concerned about some of these questions that we have over here, because the Rambam was the great rationalist. There are those who don't like that the title as for the Rambam, but it really is a pretty true statement. The Rambam wanted to understand Judaism on its most simplistic level, so that anyone who comes to deny the Torah, anyone who comes to question the Torah, we have to have some sort of an answer on which to stand on. And so the Rambam, in his introduction to his commentary on all of Mishnayos, where he offers explanations on the Mishnah, on the Mishnayot themselves, he begins with an introduction before the entirety of the commentary, and he says several things, and we're going to skim this paragraph right now. You can see the mouse when I do this, right? Yeah? Okay, so we'll follow along with the mouse, and when we skip ahead, I'll make it clear that we're skipping. So he says, "V'hinei lecha mashal." So he says, "Let's understand this." Shekadosh Baruch Hu amar leMoshe, basukot teishvu shivat yamim. So we have to know that when we say that Moshe received the whole Torah, we mean that he received lines like what's written in the Torah, that we are obligated to dwell in the Sukkot for 7 days. That's clear that Moshe received that from God directly. Achar kach, after that, hodia shasukah hazos chova al hazacharim lo al hanakivot. After that, we have new halachot that we expounded from these verses. For example, we know that men are obligated to sit in a sukkah, but women are not obligated because women are not obligated on for time-bound mitzvot, and the sukkah is a time-bound mitzvah. And we also know v'she'ein hacholim chayavin ba v'lo holchei derech. We also know that someone who is sick is not obligated to sit in the sukkah, and someone who is traveling is not obligated to sit in a sukkah. V'shelo yihyeh sechucha ela b'tzemach ha'aretz, v'lo yisachachena b'tzemer v'lo b'meshi v'lo v'kelim. And we also have very specific details of what is to and not to be used for our schach that covers the sukkah. V'hodia sheha'achila v'hashtia v'hashena ba kol shiva chova. And we also know that eating and drinking and sleeping are part of the requirements of being in the sukkah. V'shelo yihyeh b'chlala pachos misheva tfachim orech al sheva tfachim rochav. And we also know there are minimum measurements for the sukkah. V'shelo yihyeh gova ha-sukkah pachos me'asar tfachim. And there are height requirements for the sukkah. V'kasher bo ha-navi alav ha-shalom not nalo ha-mitzvah hazot u'perushaha v'kein ha-sheish me'os v'shalosh esrei mitzvos heim u'perusham ha-mitzvos b'chzav v'ha-perush al-peh. So says the Rambam that we have to understand that one category of mitzvot that we had in the Torah were written with just a simple verse, like dwell in a sukkah for 7 days, and there were additional elements of the halachos that Moshe gave down in explaining that verse. What does it mean to dwell in a sukkah for 7 days? Well, men are obligated, women are not, sick people, travelers are all not obligated, etc., etc. Here are the very specific details of how large the walls have to be, how wide and how long the sukkah has to be. All of these, says the Rambam, were the oral explanations that Moshe himself had and gave over to the very next generation. So we see that there were certainly written and certainly oral details that were all given to Moshe at Har Sinai. V'hu, and let's see further, sheyuchal adam lomar im pirushei haTorah kfi asher yisadenu mikubalim mipi Moshe, kemo she'amarnu midivrayim kol haTorah ne'emru b'klaloseh pratoseh v'diktukeha miSinai. And so we see now that a person is able to say that all of these things were received from Moshe, and we have a principle that even the tiniest of details were received at Sinai. But im kein, ma'ilu ha-halachos ha-yechidos shene'emar behen halacha le-Moshe mi-Sinai. So now we have a question, though. When we say that there are halachos that are directly from the Torah, and when we say that there are halachos that are halacha le-Moshe mi-Sinai, so what's the difference? Right? What is this category of halacha le-Moshe mi-Sinai that it was sort of passed down? Is that the definition of the entire oral Torah? Is it its own category? This is what the Rambam wants to understand. V'zei ikar yish l'cha la'amod al sodo. And so here he's going to explain it. V'hu sha'perushim ha-mekubalim mipi Moshe, kemo sha'amarnu midivrayim, ein machlokes behem b'shum panim. So he says that when we have something that is halacha la-Moshe mi-Sinai, it means it was an explanation that was given that no one argues about. Everyone agrees that Moshe said exactly this. Shaharei me'az v'arata lo matzano machlokes shanaflu b'zman min hazmanim mi'imos Moshe v'ad Rav Ashi b'in ha-chachamim kedei she'yomar echad ha-motzi ayin chaveru yotziu es eino shenemar ayin ba'ayin v'yomar ha-sheni eino ela kofer belvad shaychayev latit. So says the Rambam, halacha la-Moshe mi-Sinai is a very specific category of oral Torah. It is the specific category of mitzvot and halachot that we have that no one argues about. The second someone, one generation stands up and one person says this and one person says that, then it's no longer going to be considered halacha l'Moshe miSinai. It's something that everyone agreed upon from the times of Moshe all the way to the times of the Gemara. V'lo matzano gam kein machlokas, and we don't find any arguments for in those categories. And another category where we don't find an argument is pre-Eitz Hadar. When it comes to the pre-Eitz Hadar, the beautiful fruit that we take on the holiday of Sukkot, kidei sheyomar achad shu etrog v'yomar achad shu chavushim o rimonim o zulato. We don't find that someone says you have to shake an etrog and someone says you have to shake a pomegranate. No, everyone agrees that when we say a pre-Eitz Hadar, a beautiful fruit, that the Torah means etrog. And so these are principles that we would consider halacha l'Moshe miSinai that no one argues about. Another example, by the way, just parenthetically, of halacha l'Moshe miSinai that no one argues about is something like the color of tefillin. Everyone agrees that the color of tefillin is black. And this is considered a halacha l'Moshe miSinai. Nowhere in the Torah is this information found, but we know that this is the color of tefillin as passed down from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. And says the Rambam, this is what we mean by the oral Torah that was a halacha l'Moshe miSinai passed down to Moshe. V'zeh inyan, and he says further now, Masha amru klaloteo pratoseha, Ratzu lomar ha'inyanim shenucha lahutziam beklal uprat u'b'shar yud gimel midos v'him mikubalim mipi Moshe miSinai. And now, says the Rambam, there are additional things that we have that were meant to be expounded upon. And we were given 13 tools by which to understand that which was passed down by Moshe. V'kulam af al pi shehim mikubalim mipi Moshe, lo ne'amar behem halacha l'Moshe miSinai, she'in lomar pri'etz hadar hu etrog halacha l'Moshe miSinai, o choval b'chaveir o meshal imamon halacha l'Moshe miSinai, she'kvar nesbarer lano she'ilu ha'pirushim kulam mipi Moshe. V'ish lehem remazim b'mikra o yotzio otam b'derach midarchi hasvara k'mo she'amarnu. So there are additional laws that we have that can be expounded not just from the language and the teachings that Moshe gave over, but actually that were given over as through hints in the Psukim. And we learn them out from various hints that the rabbis point out through the 13 attributes that the Torah that were passed down for us to understand the Torah. So ultimately, we then realize v'al kein kol davar she'in lo remez b'mikra v'enu nikshar bo v'iyav shar lo tziyu b'derach min darchei esvara alav levado ne'mar halach l'Moshe miSinai. So anytime, says the Rambam, that we have a statement from the Torah that has no way of being connected to a verse, but we just know this to be true, that's halacha l'Moshe miSinai. But as soon as you can learn something out from a verse through the 13 attributes that we have to learn things from the Torah, that is something that is no longer in the category of halacha l'Moshe miSinai because it can be learned from an alternative method. And so we now understand that there are basically two categories. There is the halacha l'Moshe miSinai, which are the black and white rules that Moshe passed down. And there are also the various lessons and teachings that we could derive from the verses of the Torah, in a sense, ourselves, from these Yud Gimel Midot that Rabbi Yishmael taught us way back when. With this information, we can now come to understand that a great deal of the Torah was given to Moshe, but there are elements of the Torah that indeed were not given to him directly, but rather through hints and through sodim or through secrets, and that he didn't even fully understand what it was that he was conveying over to the next generation, and it's upon the next and following generations after him to begin to learn and understand what it is exactly that he is actually trying to teach, and what it was that he didn't even fully comprehend. Right? So as an example, Moshe knew that there were crowns on top of the letters, but he had no idea what they meant. But he passed them down regardless. And then came Rabbi Akiva generations later, and he expounded and explained what they were all about. With all of this said, we do have to try and understand a little bit more deeply the statement that we have in the Gemara earlier. This idea that Moshe himself didn't understand something that was passed down by him. Right, so this idea of halacha l'Moshe miSinai that Rabbi Akiva could say, "Don't worry, this is all from Moshe." Well, if Moshe had no idea what it was that he was teaching, how come he knew so little of what was going on in the class? And so answers in source number 6, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh was Rabbi Chaim ibn Abatar, and he was a 17th century, I believe, Moroccan commentator. He says as follows, V'nireh ki yashuv ha-mamarim hu, ki hin emet shekol davar Torah ne'amar le-Moshe. He says, we have to understand something. The entire Torah was given to Moshe. No one can know more than Moshe did. And says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, there was nothing that Moshe did not know. So far, a little unclear then. Aval ha'efreshu, ki Moshe natan lo Hashem Torah shebichtav, v'Torah shebal peh. Hashem gave Moshe these two parts of the Torah. V'hinei ha'adon baruch hu b'chachmato yitbarach rasham b'Torah shebichtav, kol Torah shebal peh she'amar l'Moshe, aval lo hudia l'Moshe kol ma shenatan lo ba'al peh. So this is similar to what Larry was saying earlier. Moshe received the whole Torah, but he didn't really know everything that he had. He didn't know heichan hu ramuz b'Torah shebichtav. He didn't know where this detail was hidden in the Torah. He didn't know exactly the full details and elements of this law. He received it from Hashem, but indeed he was not fully able to comprehend cognitively everything that he had before him. So when he got the whole Torah, he then passed it on to the next generation and so on and so forth. But beyond that, it was up to each generation to fully understand what it was that they had before them. Vizu hi avodat b'nei Yisrael amalei Torah. And this is the responsibility of the Jewish people over the generations who were learning and toiling through the Torah. Sheyashvu ha'alachos shenamru l'Moshe b'Sinai v'asodot v'adrashot kulan yitnu lehem makom b'Torah shebichtav. To understand that there are secrets and there are details that were in the Torah that Moshe himself did not know, and it's our responsibility to find them. And this is why we had the great rabbis in the times of the Gemara that had so many different versions of the oral Torah. There was the Gemara, and there was the Tosefta, and there were various halachic works, because there were so many different elements, and they spent their entire lives compiling, expounding, understanding the words that Moshe himself didn't fully understand on every level, but that he gave us the tools to understand. Stand them by. The kol darashtam bechsuvim einam ella al pi halachos v'halavishum b'toras Hashem tamima shebichtav. And everything that we have is from the Torah that's written down and from the oral Torah, but it requires a deeper, delving into and understanding to try to get at what the Torah is all about. So I'm going to stop sharing right now and just sort of do a brief summary of everything that we spoke about today, and happy to take any questions. And again, any comments, either online or offline, would be welcome. So we asked the question of what Torah did Moshe receive at Har Sinai? And we tried to understand if Moshe really knew everything that we know nowadays, or if his knowledge was perhaps limited and he only knew certain details of what we know nowadays. And the answer that we essentially gave through the perspective of both the Rambam and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is that the answer is really a nuanced perspective of all of the above. Moshe was given the entire Torah. He received everything. There is nothing new after Moshe, but we do have a way of learning and expounding the Torah that it would have been cognitively impossible for Moshe to have had all of that information. And in fact, over time, throughout the generations, we were given the ability to uncover deeper and deeper messages. In fact, nowadays, one could make the argument that still there are elements of the Torah that are not fully uncovered and not fully understood, and that we have now come to understand them due to, you fill in the blank, great rabbi of the generation. One potential example of this, at least on a superficial level, is electricity on Shabbos, right? So electricity on Shabbos, was Moshe told how to deal with electricity on Shabbos? Yes and no, right? On the one hand, he was given the tools by which to deal with issues like this. But on the other hand, he had no way of knowing that there would overcome this question of dealing with electricity, and it was only up to the later generations, most notably our generation, or, you know, 100 years ago or so, to deal with what do we do now that we have what seems to be a new reality, and we apply the great eternal values of the Torah to what seems to be something that is new. And we come to understand that it's not fully new because it can be tied into earlier teachings from previous generations. And so ultimately we see that the Torah sort of straddles this line of being a living text, but at the same time, everything that comes from the Torah is meant to be understood to have all been given to Moshe at Har Sinai. So when we say Moshe kibal Torah miSinai, Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai and then pass it on to the next generation and so on and so forth, it's true he did that, but each generation is sort of empowered with this ability to more deeply understand newer, nuanced details of what the Torah has to offer. And ultimately, we can appreciate how special that is, that it's not just that the Torah is a stagnant piece. It's meant to be a living text that we are meant to expound differently every generation. Now, we say that with the grain of salt because we believe that not everyone has the right to be an expounder of the Torah. Everyone can learn Torah, but not everyone can expound new halachos, and that sort of is dependent on the generation and the great rabbis of the time, etc., etc., but that we do have this ability to learn new elements of it in every single generation. So next time, what I would like to try and understand more deeply is how the debate that we, the debate process and the debate traditions that we have that seems to so deeply define so much of the oral Torah, how that all came to be. Like, why do Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, why do all these people argue so much? Like, how could it be that we are so confused as to what the meaning of the Torah is? And so that's going to be, God willing, the focus of next week. But for now, we'll stop here. And if anyone has any questions or comments, happy to take any.